What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Thanks, man. We made it back. We are fresh back from the beach.
We are indeed. And yeah. Jay, we need the update. Everybody's been on the edge of their wagons. How did owning a beach wagon ultimately go? Was it worth it?
I know we spent like the last two episodes of the pop discussing the beach wagon.
All I'm hoping at this point in time is that like when we get out on tour and we're starting to like meet with people and go and have chat, people are like, I couldn't wait to hear more of the beach wagon saga.
Yeah, I know.
Like that's,
I know.
It's what people tune in for.
Dude, mom texted me about it, you know.
Did she really?
She really did. She's like, how was the beach wagon? How was it? Was it worth it? Yeah, same thing.
I know.
I had people in the Discord just being like, you have to do it, you know, or whatever.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I wonder if there's any like naysayers out there who are like, absolutely.
Let me tell you, I guess I haven't heard from that camp of people who are just like, yeah, I understood that in my core. I exactly see where you're coming from.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if you were just on this one, like just straight up on an island.
Maybe I was. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, or maybe those messages just didn't find me.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because nobody had a wagon to carry the words to you.
Exactly. No one had that wagon to carry the words to me. I would say having the beach wagon proved to be useful. It started being useful like 1 second into the trip. So
you're a convert.
I would say the trip would not have been doable without it.
Oh my gosh. Sure. So not only was it useful, but it was like vital.
I would describe it as vital, more or less, for the sake. So I will stand by that the way we went to the beach growing up, it was not needed. And like if we did that again, if our family, you know, rented that house at Holden Beach and, you know, our family stayed there, I would say I wouldn't even bring it because I just wouldn't even need it.
And I do think that like fundamentally I can fully appreciate where you're coming from there, because that's like you're talking about like maybe a 30-40 foot walk out the back door, you know, down like the little deck thing that they build,
yeah,
set of stairs to the sand, and
yeah, like you wouldn't even be like, it would be a terrible thing to have there because you'd have to get it down the stairs.
That's exactly it. Yes. Yeah. So like even for me, so like right away, like we went like on sort of like an impromptu trip to the beach this past week as well. So you and I both went to the beach, not together
and not at the same beach.
Yeah, correct. And a pretty uncommon occurrence, I would say, on the whole. But
yeah,
because we were so like late in booking it, we ended up being like in like a second row versus like more, you know, what we would be typically used to doing, which is like right there on the water. And so like we had an interesting situation where then when you're on the second row, you just use like the public beach access, which really isn't that big of a deal. But the house was positioned in relation to the two public beach accesses on either side of us, we were about as far away as possible, which was maybe like 0.3 miles.
Yeah.
So like really not the end of the world, but it was like a, you know, a little bit of a jaunt. And so same thing, like right away, it was kind of like, okay, without this thing, then it would have meant like essentially very unlikely that we would have brought like our little like tent situation, beach chairs,
right,
you know, cooler, you know, we probably would have bring in, you know, like towel over each shoulder, other hand carrying the water bottle. But even then, like the kids would ride in the wagon, like kind of like on the way back, especially because they're like covered in sand. They don't want to put their sandals back on. Yeah. You know, the pavement's really hot. So like that was like a whole thing right away. And the only reason I really bring all these details up, because it's basically covering anything that any person who's ever gone to the beach and used the beach wagon is surely aware of, which is just you're using it to carry your stuff. But on the last day, so we were there Saturday to Saturday. On Friday, one of the guys that I was, well, the guy that I was with, my friend David, was like looking through this like binder that they had like left on the table when we got there, but just we never like looked through it because we just figured like, oh, when we go to check out, we'll like look for the checkout instructions.
Yeah.
So he's just like flipping through it as he was like, you know, eating his breakfast. And he was like, oh, there's deeded access for this property. So like, it was kind of like not public beach access, which is what would show up like on Google Maps.
Right. Okay.
Which is how I sussed out where to go.
Right.
It's like there is deeded access between these two houses, which is like six houses down from us. So instead of this like 2/10, 3/10 of a mile walk, it would have been like 100 yards.
So like, what would that mean that you would get to use their dock or
not their dock, but there's, it's almost as if like on the main strip, it would almost be like as if there's like a mini HOA that like went in on creating a dock that just goes from the road over to the beach, but like you have to be in on it. There's like a sign that says like, you know, deeded properties only.
I see.
Theoretically, I mean, there's nothing stopping anyone. There's not like a gate, you know, or like a key or a person or right, anything
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. It's just good faith.
Just good faith. And you know, it's a little more like off the beaten path. And again, it wouldn't show up on the map. So like, unless you knew it was there, you might not know it was there, which is exactly what happened to us. But the thing I would say about it is that the way that they built it over the dune, because it wasn't public beach access, it went up a set of stairs that was like 20 steps up and then, you know, it, I don't know, 30 yards long or whatever, and then set of steps back down to the beach. And so it's the same thing where it was like, we discovered on the last day that we could have been way closer to a different way to get to the beach.
Right.
The problem was that we would still need the wagon.
Yeah.
Because it was still enough of a walk to accommodate the wagon.
Right.
But then it was like, but then you have to carry the wagon up the stairs, down the stairs, both ways.
Right.
And it was
not ADA compliant.
Precisely. Yeah. And so then all of a sudden it was like, no, it doesn't matter how much closer it is. It was still worth using the public beach access because it was just a ramp. And it was like, that allowed us to use the wagon. We had to use the wagon either way. And so it was like, how weird is that? Like,
yeah.
We had one that was way closer and it was just like, how did we not know? But then it was like, it doesn't help.
It doesn't matter.
Like, it wasn't better. You know, right, like, yeah. It was like,
it would be better if you were already like, if it was already like you were all teenagers or something and people were just like, I'm heading down to the beach and they just took off.
That would be fine.
Yeah.
And so like, even yeah, like that evening, the last final evening, we were like, you know, Allie and I were like, oh, let's just go for a walk on the beach. And so like,
right.
we did buzz down that way. Cause it was just us in our sandals, you know, like it was like yeah. Easy peasy. But, yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, the wagon conversation, I could not believe the number of times that I was like going through our various stages of like how it could be useful, where we would need it, what the problems might be. Like I was like the relationship with the wagon dictated so much about how everything happened.
Yeah. 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 You see how core it is.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes. Yeah. So, but at the place we were at, it was like, I remember looking at the layout online and there was, I think I was looking at it maybe like backwards or something, but the way in which it looked like you had beach access was this like, was a ramp, but that like U-turned back on itself like four times.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I was like, oh my gosh. For one, if we have a wagon, we have to deal with this every single day. Just going down the ramp is going to be like its own challenge.
A taxing thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like they don't have, you know, big turning rate or they have wide turning radiuses.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At best. Plus, I'm sure it'll be loaded with stuff and there'll be other people on the ramp and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and that ramp did exist, but it was not part of the beach access. It was part of the hotel access. Or not hotels, more like condos, but.
Right.
In any case, so that was a relief. And it was like, it didn't, where that led to was the same level that you then got to the beach. So it wasn't like if you're bringing your wagon down, you had to like take that down and get down that ramp every single day and then get to the beach.
Sure.
That just got you to the parking lot. So that was good. But right away, even just getting unloading the car, because we were on the top floor of the like condo complex we were in, which was the fourth floor.
Fancy.
Right.
Penthouse suite, as I like to call it.
Yeah. Penthouse, basically, if you want to. So just getting stuff from the car to the room, it was not like unloading the car at like when you have a beach house where you just keep walking down to the car and then walk back up the stairs.
Yeah.
You know, like if I had to carry stuff to the room in that way, that would have taken me like over an hour and it would have been enormously taxing And, you know, we had so many bags and stuff just to get up there.
Right.
But like, you know, they did have the hotel cart thing. So we had like a hotel cart, but then you could just also immediately unfold the wagon and load that up with stuff.
Yeah.
So that was very convenient. Just immediately out of the car. Like I can put a bunch of big stuff in here and just, we have two carts right away. Awesome. Great. Get stuff up there.
Yep.
So that was really good. I was actually really proud of the wagon I chose too. It had a little thing that like folded off the front, but when it folded down, it was like the exact shape of the like soft bag cooler we had. So that was just like the, well, it ended up being like the snack cooler for like the week. So we just put like all the chips, all the whatever in there.
Yeah.
Just sat in the front, didn't take up any extra space. Boom, right there. Didn't make it wider either, which was important.
That is important.
Made it longer, but not wider. So that was really great. And then it was not like, I didn't feel like we were bringing more than we needed down to the beach. Like maybe we would have maybe a little, but it was never like we were stuffing it full of like every crack, you know?
Sure.
It was like, we had our two beach chairs. We had our cooler of drinks. We had the towels. We had sand toys. There you go.
Right.
And it filled it up appropriately. And we brought it to the beach, and that was good. The sand, the tires, or the I had the wide base plastic wheels. Those worked on the sand, no problem.
Ah,
yep, that was good. And I'd say it was necessary, just because even just getting from the room to the ramp to the beach meant going down like either an elevator or like you had to get from the top floor to the bottom floor.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like a lot of stuff to carry otherwise. So
did you just debate throwing it off the edge of your balcony?
No, I didn't consider that. That was, yeah, I mean, we weren't like beachfront in that way. There was, if you looked out our balcony, you saw, I mean, that didn't drop down to the sand or anything. That dropped down to like a little grassy area in front of the condos. And then beyond that was the pool. And then beyond that was the ocean.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Quite the journey. Well, you know, what's interesting is I also got the one with the beach wheels or whatever. And as I was going through like all the reviews, people were like, oh, like, you know, they call it like a beach wagon, but it's like terrible in soft sand. And I got to the soft sand and it was such a workout. Like the soft sand did not work at all for us.
No.
Like absolutely perfect for everything except for like the final little jaunt. And like I would get over there and literally Addie would get out of the wagon and she would like push from behind.
And
she was like, Daddy, I'm helping. And I was like, you are helping.
Wow.
Like this is making a difference. Thank you for that. But otherwise the wheels were essentially just plowing their way through the sand. And so I would get to like our spot every day and go to like set up the tent or whatever. And I mean, I would be just dripping sweat.
I bet. So like how wide are they? Like this wide or like this wide?
I would say that they're like maybe like five inches wide.
And all four of them were like that?
All four wheels are like that.
Man, yeah. I'm surprised.
So maybe, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was just the powdery sand or something. Yeah. But like,
on the other hand, that's one version of the beach wheels. Did you see any that are like the big, like almost inner tube looking?
I looked at those and I would say that I would have been like in favor of the inner tube tire. But then I was like, I think that realistically I'm going to end up using this wagon for like a myriad of different things. Like I could already picture taking it to like Go Fest or something like that. Or like at our dock, we have, it's not a terribly long walk, but like you park in the cul-de-sac, you go down a hill and like take it over.
Yeah.
Which I did yesterday. And right away I was like, oh my gosh, even this is just so much better. So right. Like those like sand tires are almost like a little like all-terrain-y, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. They remind me of those like jumbo mountain bikes that like have, you know, I think I've got like pretty cool wheels on my mountain bike, and then I see some people riding those and I'm like, goodness, what are you driving on, a couch over there?
Yeah,
you
know? Right. I don't know. I mean, yeah. you kidding me?
Yeah, come on.
But I mean, you know, I mean I like to think of my wagon as quite the outdoorsman tool, you know. Right. It's like there's like some like wood shaving, like obviously associated.
I'll tell you what, I don't think I would want inflatable tires though.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
This is another pro tip, all right, if you're a parent, all right, like you're probably gonna, if you're gonna want the Bob, I get it, you're gonna want the Bob stroller, and the Bob is great if you're gonna go running and stuff. It's basically a requirement if you're gonna be those people. But like, let me tell there is no tires on earth that are worse to inflate than
the Bob
the Bob stroller tires.
Yes, like, and if you're unfamiliar, the Bob stroller is like, it has like almost like bicycle wheels.
Yeah,
and the primary objective of it has like a front locking wheel so that like you can like run straight and stuff like that. But if you've ever done like a drumstick dash Thanksgiving Day 5K, certainly you've seen them before.
Yeah.
But they're more expensive, and they have like one specialty purpose, but yeah, those tires are the absolute worst.
Yeah. And you're like, oh no, don't worry. I'll just like, it'll be fine. I'll just use my bike pump. No, you won't. No, you won't. It won't. You can't fit it in there. Yeah. It won't fit. You're going to have to use their bike pump. Which is not a bike pump at all. It's like one of those tiny hand pumps that barely does anything. And even that, barely going to fit. And that one, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
You're going to put it in the little pouch on the back of the Bob and be like, this is where it'll be. It'll be here when I need it. But it won't be.
It'll be where somewhere else.
I don't know where it is. I don't know why you ever would have moved it. But guess what? You weren't accounting for. You have kids now. That's why you have the stroller at all. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
It's not there.
It's under one of their beds.
It's on some shelf where you were unloading the trash that accumulated in that pocket. And then you were like, I'm going to put it here and I'm going to put it right back. But then you didn't. And then it fell under a shelf. You know, like it's not there. And when you do find it, and you will, you will spend a good 20 minutes arguing with it about doing its one specific job that only it can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I just got to say, like, I am fairly certain that like, if there's like styrofoam packing that mine came in or something, I'm pretty sure I just threw mine away from the start, because you're talking about a dedicated pump and I'm like, there's a dedicated pump.
There's one that comes with it. Yeah.
Maybe mine's like tucked into like a sleeve somewhere.
And exactly.
I've had it the whole time and I've still wrestled with it anyway.
That's the other thing. Your Bob stroller has so many pockets. Who knows which one it's in?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you put it in the little undercarriage thing, but then you put the whole stroller in your car and it fell out, you know?
Ugh.
And now it's somewhere in your car. And good for you. You'd be ridiculous for you to be aware of it, you know? I'm not, you're not like you're not some superhuman person. You're a regular person. You don't know where it went. You just threw it in the back of the car.
You, right? Like me, are a regular person.
You're a regular person. You can't be expected to keep track of everything that falls out of the stroller. Stuff's falling out of it all the time. Okay.
It is. Yes. Jay, you just gave me a positively spectacular transition opportunity. So with your permission, I would love to seize it.
Okay.
Because
let's do it.
I had no idea how we would get from strollers to anything else.
Yeah.
But we've maybe found it.
Let's do it.
So we're regular people, right?
That's as far as I can tell.
As far as we can tell.
Yeah.
Okay. So my buddy David, who I was at the beach with, is a civil engineer. And so while we were out there, we were of course talking about like the beach access points, and like, you know, I was telling him about how growing up going to the beach, it seemed like, because we were talking about like, you know, of course you open up Zillow because you're at the beach and you're like, hey, should we buy a beach house? Like,
right. Like, what's it like?
How much are they?
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, too much is the answer.
Too much.
But, you know, then we're talking about maintenance, cause you know, like the salty air, all that type of stuff. You know, we're like standing underneath the house, looking at all the lag bolts, which are just like rusted into oblivion. Like they were bolts and now they look like they could mutate and become whatever is that like fungal creation from that one TV show that like occupies your brain and turns you into like a zombie.
Oh, The Last of Us.
The Last of Us, yeah. So, you know, the rust on the lag bolts at the beach, basically the spawn point.
Right, for it's like metal tumors now of the house.
Exactly,
yeah.
Metal tumors, good description.
Thank you.
Good description. But I don't know if you remember this or not, but like coming off the beach house that we went growing up, I would say every somewhere between 3 to 6 years approximately, the deck going off the back had to be completely rebuilt.
Yeah, it was completely different year in, year out.
Yeah, and into like new configurations. Like sometimes they would have like a little like turn off point where you could like potentially sit and have like a like an evening beer, or you know, not us, obviously we were kids, but like our parents, you know, would be out there. And then sometimes there was like a huge set of stairs that needed to go down to the beach, and other times it was just like a little set of anyway, so it changed. And in my mind I'm like, you know, that's a bit of upkeep that like if you own one of these beach houses, in addition to them costing like $1 million+, you're also gonna have to replace your decking so often.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we were talking about the beach access point, and because David's a civil engineer, I was like what do you have to like think of? And so what we were talking about is the concept called like a 100-year storm. And are you familiar with how those work?
I guess that, I mean, it sounds to me like it is a storm that is of particular severity and the likelihood of it happening is once in 100 years.
Precisely correct. Yeah. Yep. And so that's how they go. So it's like you have this like rather infrequent scenario where like if you're designing something, you may be tasked with accommodating. And so like we were talking about like bridges and stuff that he designs, and he's like, you know, we're probably accounting more for like a 500-year storm, which like when you think about that, it's like that's a pretty unbelievably unlikely like happening.
Right.
But it's also like probably at different places in the world at different points in time. Like I'd be willing to bet somewhere in the United States has experienced a 500-year storm, you know, in the past century.
Right.
You know, case in point, actually, even here in downtown Roanoke, like I've got the aquariums in this building called Center in the Square. And once upon a time in 1985, there was such severe flooding in Roanoke that the storm water would have literally filled my life support room where all the filters are.
Right.
From floor to ceiling.
Yeah.
Like it would destroy every single thing that we built so completely that you would have to abandon rebuilding it.
Right.
Like shy of like such enormous amounts of money flooding from tax support or government support or something like that, because it would be so badly ruined.
Right. You'd have to do a complete like excavation of everything there and just start from scratch again.
Start from scratch. Yep. Yeah. It would all be broken. And so obviously that's a really rare thing. But then it kind of got me wondering, like when you talk about like generational talent in sports, like you and I sometimes talk about like, you know, the goats of any given thing. Mm-hmm. You're talking like LeBron James, Michael Jordan, you know, Serena Williams,
Tom Brady,
Wayne Gretzky, you know, like name your sport, chances are there is somebody who has sort of like stepped in and done it in a way that like almost no one else has.
Right.
And so like when you speak to like generational talent, like there's almost no way in the world that like our kids won't grow up to see a new GOAT in a variety of different sports because they're gonna happen.
Right.
So it's almost like if you were to attempt to define a GOAT in a sport, it's like, are they a 50-year human?
Oh, right. Yeah. Are they like a... I hear what you mean.
Like, what kind of storm is that person?
Right.
Because when you say generational typically means approximately 30 years.
Right, yeah.
Because that's going to be like when the next one would start, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, at any given point in time, there's maybe three generations coexisting.
Right.
You know, plus or minus, obviously. That's not, like, a hard and fast law, but, you know, about.
Yeah.
You know, people living to about 90. And so, like, then when you start to think about it, it's like, yeah, Michael Jordan, it's like LeBron James came after him. So we've already witnessed, like, one. And then there's been another one.
Right.
You know, so it's like, could you go so far as to say that like, does it feel too limiting to say that Michael Jordan was a 30-year storm?
That is a good question. That's a good question. And it's almost like, because LeBron is still playing, it's like,
He's played for 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like if Michael Jordan had not retired and he kept playing until LeBron entered, like could LeBron have even been LeBron, you know, or would it just be like, no, Michael's still here?
Well, I don't know.
You know, like, can anyone be the next LeBron until LeBron is gone?
No, because I don't think there was a lot of debate in the beginning, you know, and hopefully these are, you know, widespread enough, well-known enough characters that people can follow what we're talking about here. Both of these players are obviously like monumental as far as the sport of basketball is concerned.
Right.
But for a long, long, long time, I feel like people were sort of like, has LeBron like usurped Jordan? And a lot of the conversation would be like a lot of people would argue like, well, LeBron's playing against like a much higher caliber like opponent than Jordan ever did. But they were like, oh, but Jordan has all these rings and all these wins and these scores and like, you know, like whatever. And it's like how...
Right. And it's like, yeah, but he's playing against those people because Michael popularized the sport to begin with, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so then you fold like legacy into the equation. Yeah. You know, one of the most common examples I always go back to this is like when it comes to World Cup soccer, you've got the women's U.S. national team, which is like usually fairly dominant on the global scale.
Yeah.
Whereas by comparison, the men's team is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, for, you know, we're really just not in that like level of contention. And a lot of times what I go back to, and maybe people with longer histories, you know, could argue this better, but I remember as a child watching Mia Hamm like win the World Cup, you know, with her team in, I forget what year it was, 95 circa, 96 or something.
Yeah.
But like, if you think about it and how good everybody has come in the wake of that, there's a lot of little girls who got to see this team do phenomenally.
Yeah.
And they then can be inspired to grow up and do that. So same thing, like, you know, you've got Jordan, who is like creating a generation of people who are really tuned into basketball and getting to see it like in a premier level. And that spawned, and there's no way in the world LeBron James didn't grow up admiring.
Oh, I know.
Michael Jordan.
He's number 23.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah,
the same
like,
number.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not an accident.
No. Not a coincidence.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you get there and like, but then to me, those people feel so singular because then you're talking about like a sport that is massively, massively, massively popular. And you know, there's so much money that funnels into it. And so like, if you were to think about the likes of LeBron James, Michael Jordan, they feel like more than a 30-year storm to me. They feel higher than that.
Right.
You know, and so then it's almost like, how do you calculate it?
Right.
Because like similarly in the same conversation, I'd say like, you know, probably somewhere in the United States in the past 100 years, there has been a 500-year storm. It hasn't been 500 years, you know, or like whatever.
Right.
You know, they could happen.
Yeah.
Like lightning can strike in different locations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it can.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, can we elevate the likes of those people up to like, maybe they're 100-year storms, you know, like maybe that's how unlikely people of that skill, talent, opportunity, resource, you know, like there's a cross section of 100 different things happening that make those people exist. A case in point is LeBron James probably doesn't exist without Michael Jordan coming before him. And
but yeah. But so like the other question I would have then is like, will like the market produce that person no matter what though, you know? It's like right now, like you had Jordan, now you have LeBron James, but like he's going to like finish his career fairly soon.
Yeah.
Like once he's gone, is there like a power vacuum? Is it, you know, it's like, oh, there was Jordan, then there was LeBron, then like even though there have been people who have been in like superstar, insane good at basketball.
Yeah.
You know, like Steph Curry is like just one of the best players to ever play the game.
Yeah.
And no one would ever say like the Kobe Bryant, you know, up there as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But and people would say they're, you know, they'd probably even argue that they're the best people who ever played the game. You
absolutely.
Know? But like, but do they have the exact like personal, the exact cachet of Jordan and LeBron? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like there is like, if you wanted to make like your Mount Rushmore, you could probably put those four faces up there and people would be like, yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty much it. Yeah.
It's hard not to look,
you know, yeah.
It's hard not to look at the stats and say, yes.
There
like,
you go.
Like, yes, you're right.
Right.
And, but I mean, and that's the thing too, is that like you can, yeah, I mean, you could take it even a step further and say, like, there's the famous example that I think you've brought up before, which is that the premier video game attached to basketball is like NBA 2K.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have the lowest ranked person. And it's just like, it's kind of like a funny stat because it means out of like all these absolutely phenomenal athletes, someone has to be the worst.
Right. Someone has the lowest average stat total in the game.
Exactly.
Because they have to, because someone
has to be the bottom. They can't all be 99s across the board. Otherwise it wouldn't be a game.
Right.
And so like that person though, obviously gets a fair amount of attention because they're sort of like, you know, I think in football, I call it like Mr. Irrelevant or something. You know, there's a term for the person who's at the bottom of the totem pole.
Right.
But then that guy can go and play a pickup game with just literally any person.
Right.
And there, you won't even score on them.
Right.
Like they're that good.
Yeah. It's like guess what? Even they might be the lowest, but it is still their full-time job day in, day out to play basketball and get better at basketball.
Yes. And the filter to get them to where they were to be in the NBA in the first place is immense.
Is immense. Like, they made it to the NBA.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right.
So you're right.
Like,
so
do you think you could beat any top talent college player? right?
Yeah, right. Right,
exactly. No, you don't think you could. Right. For some reason, you think you could beat a bottom level NBA player, though, even though definitionally they had to pass the other test.
Right, yeah. So it's like, but then you start to wonder, it's sort of like, okay, are like all of those people like, you know, branding, cachet, all the, you know, the right look, the right story, the right, you know, whatever, away from just also kind of being elevated into a place where it's like, it's pretty remarkable. Because if you go to any of their high schools, I guarantee they have a shrine to every single NBA player that has ever, you know, it's
right.
It is a huge deal. They all came
from some high school.
They all came from somewhere. And you know what? To that hometown, they are heroes.
They are heroes. Yeah. You go to ours, there you will see all of the notable alumni, you know, like Rondé and Tiki Barber. Yep. I'm sure JJ Redick has a lot of representation. I'm sure we don't, because we're not on the Wikipedia page yet.
There's like somebody at like the Cave Spring High School like committee meetings,
yeah,
where they're sort of like, yeah, do we need to like build a thing? I just saw the Carlin brothers showed up, and it's sort of, yeah, like, ah, no, they're off again. It's like, okay, again.
Never mind.
You know,
forget about.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. It is no secret at this point that Jay and I are big advocates for mental health and trying to knock down any stigma behind seeking out therapy. We are both regulars ourselves in our own sessions, and our team has the freedom to take their own sessions as needed, no questions asked. And as much as we speak about our own experiences, it's not just us. If you head over to betterhelp.com/reviews, you can see so many other people sharing their experience and the impact that it's had on their lives. And it honestly warms my heart that there are so many of them. Over 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally and maintain a 4.9 out of 5 rating based on over 1.7 million reviews. And when I stepped into my first therapy session, I had myself convinced I was being dramatic. The crazy part is realizing just how much weight you may be carrying with you every day. And there is someone out there who can help. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better. H-E-L-P.com.
Man, we talked about it a while ago, my 20th anniversary high school reunion,
yeah,
a couple of weeks ago. And it was so funny because part of me was just like, oh man, like I've got like such a like fun like job thing I do now, you know?
Yeah.
Like it feels like unique.
Jonathan, you made me bust out all 8 letters.
Yeah.
You know, I had to pull extra 7 for it.
Like, yeah.
You know, I'm not quick to pat ourselves on the back, but you certainly have an interesting job.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Well, guess what? Let me tell you how many people asked me about it, which is nobody.
But no.
Nobody.
You must be mm-hmm. joshing me.
I know.
Right now.
I was like, great. It's cool. It's fine. This is just like high school. I get it. Yeah. Not really. I mean, it was fine. We went. And you know, it was nice to see some people, but it was so funny how everyone just sort of like, you know, yeah, everyone stood in the same little circles they did when they were in high school and talked to all the same little people. And it's like, I talked to all the people I talked to, and I didn't talk to all the people I didn't talk to, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh. That is so funny.
It's
though.
So silly.
So yeah. Like, okay. So then when you did speak to people, did they like, I'm just curious, like, did they know, or were like people like, no way, really? Like, that's what you do now?
No, I mean, not really. No. Like I would say like, you know, yeah, I'm like doing YouTube or whatever. And like that is about as far as it would go. You know, it wasn't. Yeah, I know. It was. I heard a lot about other people's like jobs and stuff like that.
You know, what's crazy is like, you know, because on the complete flip side, like I will sometimes like go to the park, and like while Addison is like on the swings and I'm pushing her or whatever, I will inevitably talk to the other people because that's just the kind of personality that I have.
Is yeah.
Like, everyone's my friend, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I just go for that. Occasionally I will, you know, you'll end up kind of going through all the, you know, how old's yours? Ah, cool. You know, like, how's it been going? Do you guys have any others? You know, like you just go, there's like a boilerplate series. A conversation, but like if Addy swings long enough, eventually the conversation, like, oh, you know what, like what do you do, it's gonna come up. So I've had at least a couple of instances where like complete strangers are like, I've heard about this,
right?
Like, you're that person,
you're that guy, you're the Roanoke, oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah. And then yeah. It's like thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Yeah. No, I'm very surprised by that, though. That's rather curious. Maybe your class was just like, maybe they were just all like minding their own business.
I mean, my take, and I could be wrong. Other people could have a different opinion. If you're, you know, of the 06 Cave Spring class, you know
what? They're not listening. They're not.
You know what? I already know you're not listening. Don't worry about it. It's okay. I felt like it was a very like apathy heavy class.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And that's a weird draw too.
Yeah.
To get, you know, like in general, like I've oftentimes talked about like my elementary school, experience was odd because I just had like a misbehaving class.
Yeah.
And it was like, it meant the teachers were frustrated and therefore oftentimes weren't super upbeat.
Right.
And I had a bunch of the same teachers as you, and you had great experiences with them,
right?
And it was like this whole thing, you know, like I feel like your teachers became like household names because of just how wonderful your experience was,
right?
And then I got there and like I watched all of my teachers cry,
right?
You know,
yeah, like had like the breakdowns, you know, and
I mean they just absolutely fell apart. So it's something, you know, there's no two ways about it. Like there are probably even principals who can like watch student bodies come through senior classes who are fun, and senior classes who maybe are just sort of
we were just the class that year.
They're just sort of seeing it through,
It just felt like it was difficult for them, for our class, to generate a ton of enthusiasm over like almost anything.
Yeah.
Is what it felt like. It was like that's at least how I felt personally in my graduating class. Maybe other people felt differently, but that is often what it felt like. And I know the class ahead of us was quite the opposite. They could rally together and be enthusiastic about everything.
Yeah. And maybe that casts a shadow.
Maybe it cast a shadow. I know that we like our class in particular had a weird draw, and like we caught the brunt of a lot of changes that were happening like across the school. So like, for example, when we attended what is now Cave Spring Middle School, it was called Cave Spring Junior High.
Oh, yes.
Right. And so the only real difference is that the junior high accommodated 6th through 9th grade and the middle school only accommodates 6th through 8th grade. And when the change happened, it meant that the high school then began accommodating the 9th graders.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that just, it does mean that there is one class out there that had to be the first freshman class at the Cave Spring High School,
which you would think is like a fun accolade.
Maybe that would be cool, right? You'd think it was our class, by the way, if you haven't figured out where this is where it's going. We were the first freshman class, right? So that's, I mean, and on its own, that's kind of an accolade, I suppose, for like a 50-year-old school, you know?
That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like you got to be a first out of something.
Right.
You know, and it's kind
of
like,
oh, that's first out of something.
That's cool.
Now, what you have to look at, though, is you have to work backwards on the math here, because what it really means is that when we were in 8th grade, we were not at the top of the school.
Right? Yeah. You weren't the senior middle schoolers.
We were not the senior middle schoolers at any point. And then the next year, we went from being not at the top to even further on the bottom, right? We went from being 8th below 9 to 9 below 12, right? You know? So that was a terrible year to catch the bullet,
right?
For my particular class. That wasn't great. Then after that, we were the first freshman class, but also the only freshman class to not get laptops.
Yeah.
Because they introduced laptops to the high school during our sophomore year, and only that doesn't mean, oh, you only got laptops for 3 years. No.
Nope.
It means that they started giving laptops to all students entering the school underneath us.
Yes.
So that freshman, the freshman class below us all got laptops and kept them for 4 years. We got none. We were the last class to not have laptops. So that was great. We were the first class to have essays on the SATs, and the driving age got increased the year we would have gotten it. So So we really caught a lot of strays.
Jay,
you're welcome, everybody.
Quick temp check. How would you say the teenage years were for you?
They were, you know, all right.
Yeah.
They were all right, you know. Yeah. I mean, I did cross country and soccer, and that was fun. And, you know, I have some good memories and stuff. That's the other thing, is that at my high school reunion, it was none of the people I hung out with were there.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those, you're just sort of looking around and you're like, man, would have been great if, you know, like Bob and Clint and Jane and Linda were here. That would have been a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah. All the peeps.
Right. All my actual people I talk to.
Right. Well, then on the alternative end of the spectrum, it was almost like this is like what I went through, where like I started, I was the only person to run like high school cross country as like an eighth grader.
Right.
So like I would go, you know, to middle school, take the bus to the high school at the end of the day, and then go join you guys for cross country practice.
Yeah.
Which was fun because it meant like I got to go and like, you know, be with you and, you know, like hang out. And I was doing, I think I felt cool that I was doing like a high school sport as like a middle schooler, you know, like that was kind of like a neat thing or whatever. But what it also meant was that I started making friends with people who were like older than me sooner. But I mean, which was really cool. Cause like, then when I was in school, I was like, oh my gosh, I got these, like, I like all my, yeah, I can like walk through the halls, and it's sort of like all of my classmates get to see me like high five and like these like upperclassmen, you know,
yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah. Which is awesome. Except then it was sort of like, I was almost, and I'm sure I did it to myself just as much as anything else, but like maybe like a little othered from like my own class.
Yeah.
Because I also made like a lot of friends at like other schools. So not only like on like the weekends as I got older, were I hanging out with people who went to different schools altogether, but like all my other friends were like upperclassmen, and then you guys all graduated.
Right.
And then, so I got to like my senior year, which is supposed to be like, you know, like, and I feel like so many people are like, you guys are living like the best years of your life right now. And I'm like, I am so miserable.
Yeah. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It's going to get better.
It's going to get better. And it absolutely does. I feel like there's nothing better than like finding your own identity, which is just hard to do
inside of
like a sea of people and strong personalities and all sorts of stuff like that. But, yeah, I know what you mean. I'd be willing to bet almost, because there's plenty of people probably listening right now that are like, yeah, well, my senior year was the COVID year.
Right. You know? I'm sure, like, that was worse.
Right.
That was worse than mine.
That sucks.
That's terrible.
Like your prom was almost certainly canceled.
Right.
You know, like,
you had the John Krasinski prom. Right.
Is that what did he, because John Krasinski during the pandemic started doing like his like show from his living room.
Yeah, his like living room or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And I think they hosted a prom on there where it was just like everyone like did like a live thing in their living room or something.
Oh, that is fun. That is fun. Yeah. So if you got to be in on the John Krasinski, maybe write to us if you got to be in on the John Krasinski prom.
Yeah.
You know, like, is anyone out there one of those people?
Yeah. That sounds, I mean, not as fun as just going to actual prom.
Right.
Probably.
Right.
Unless you didn't want to go, in which case, good for you.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe it was kind of a relief. It was like, oh boy, prom's canceled. Oh no.
Dodge that bullet. There's a lot of pressure put on prom, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like one of those things where it's sort of like, oh, you got to go and you got to like figure out like how to like look cool. And
right.
Do you know how to dance? Because I don't.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. So it seems like everyone else sort of knows. Why don't I know?
Right.
Yeah. But then like I never talk to people who are like, oh yeah, I know. I knew how.
Yeah.
You know, right, everyone feels like they don't, and yet everyone's sort of doing it. So just know that no one knows.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And maybe just feel the music, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing that I don't get about dancing. And I know that this is another like subject that we've circled so many times here on the pop. Like, I feel like some people are like, you know, just go out there and like, just do like what feels natural. I'm like, if I do what feels natural, it's going to look ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it is incoherent jubilation.
Yeah.
You know, except like extract any of the fun, and what you end up with is like a really stoic looking wacky waving inflatable balloon man.
Do you know?
Do I
okay.
know? All right.
Okay. I listened to a podcast on the way home from the beach. Okay.
Yep, that unexpected. Yeah. Tell me more.
I know. Okay. It was, they said the name of this like nightclub in Berlin, the Berg something.
Okay.
Like a million. Apparently it's like the most exclusive nightclub in the world, but not because you have to be rich to get into it, because you have to visibly, in the way you dress and act, understand the dark heart and soul of techno music.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
And like celebrities get turned away from this place. It's all down to the discerning eye of this like legendary bouncer or whatever.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this sounds like a singularity. Yeah.
Okay.
What year storm is this bouncer?
Oh man,
is this a hundred year storm?
He's the guy.
Yeah,
He might be a hundred year bouncer.
Oh
yeah.
Man, good for him.
Good for him.
Shout out
to that guy whose name is Sven. I'm pretty sure.
Good.
Good for Sven.
I'm excited that it's a reindeer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a small Frozen reference.
That is a small Frozen reference. Yeah. I don't think this guy looks like Sven from Frozen at all.
Not looking like a physical, actual cartoonized reindeer.
Yeah.
It would have been surprising if he did.
I think he's got like big like lip rings that look like fangs and
nice.
You know, like a bunch of like cool face tattoos and stuff.
Wow. It's like, you know, like face tattoos, a choice sometimes, choice tattoo, you know, but like maybe some people it's like, you know what? It fits.
But this guy knows whether or not you belong inside that building or
right,
not.
Right.
Good, and the way it was described, well, first I'll just say, I thought this was such an interesting, because you think of like nightclubs in America and you think of like, oh, it's almost like a status thing. It's like, oh yeah, you go in and you pay extra money for drinks and you have VIP lounges and, you know, you dance and stuffs and whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not a club in the sense of like the way you think of like, oh, I'm part of the, you know, chess club, you know, where it's like, you're there to like play chess. Right. But like in other countries, like if you were at a nightclub, you were at a place, you were at a club for people who like techno music, you know, like you're part of the club.
So you're not thinking of, okay. Cause I was like, are you comparing clubbing to chess club right now? Because I do think that they are fundamentally different.
No,
products.
I agree. They're different, but they're using the word club in the same way.
Okay.
Right.
So like you enter the techno club because it's almost as if like you belong
right.
in this club.
Right. Like some, like you are like what they want at this club are participants, not, spectators.
Right. Yes.
Not so, visitors.
So it's not the kind of thing like let's say you're on like a bachelorette party type situation or whatever. It's like you might go out to the club because you want to buy drinks for the person and like everybody's there to dance and there's loud music and blah blah blah. It's like you go as a connoisseur of the techno, and like part of what makes the experience perfect is that everyone there agrees about like how yeah. we enjoy this together.
Exactly. It's like we didn't let you into the chess club. Like, you know, if you went to a physical building and you're like, yes, I'm a member of the club. You know, and you went in there and like all you wanted to do was actually just sort of like sit at the bar and chat and not, you know, play chess
right,
or whatever.
Right.
It'd be like, why would you even want to be here? You know, like, why would we want you in here? You know, you're not like, we gather together to play chess and you're not here to play chess. So I don't understand what the problem is.
Right.
Yeah. Like, why would we let you in? So that is sort of the attitude. It's just like, are you here because you think, oh, it's like, oh, it's such a, maybe it's like a bit touristy or something. Like, I'm going to go check out this really exclusive one. See if I can get through the door or whatever. And it's like, they're right. not going to let you, they're going to spot you. They know you're not here because you believe in the heart and soul of techno music.
Right. Know? Yeah. Yeah.
And that is it. So I thought that was fascinating. In any case, all that to say, vis-a-vis your dancing, is that as I was listening to it, they were also talking about like why like raves and techno music are in particular like, so like what is the allure and the appeal of them?
Okay.
In general.
Yep.
And like why do people do it? Why is it almost, and what it came down to was, wait, that,
can I take a quick guess?
Yeah.
But because I did a rave once when I was in Australia.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was at the Sydney mm-hmm. Opera House. But I would argue it is anonymity.
That is definitely a part of it.
Okay.
It is like it was described as like for people, a lot of people like it because like they are so in their mind all the time, but they can go to this place and the music is so loud that they can literally feel it like bouncing in their, you know, like in their soul almost.
Right.
And they don't have to be in their mind. They can just be in their body, and they're not even just a part of themselves. They're part of the crowd, which is a part of the music. And it's like, it's just, you can get completely lost inside of it. And like, I was like, I do really understand that allure. There is a certain like, you are not yourself here. You are just part of the mass. You have like lost personal identity, and there is a certain anonymity to being part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's so fascinating to hear it like almost described back to me, because whenever I think about this experience when I was on my study abroad, it's always been like one of those things where I'm like, why was I able to participate that night in a way that was so much more like genuine? Like I had like such a wonderful experience, and it wasn't, you know, like the drinks were like too expensive for us to even like really afford them, you know? So like, it was kind of like one of those things, you know, we're all like all broke college students and stuff. And it's like a very expensive place. And you know, but that was like one occasion that I go back to. And a lot of times I'm like, was it because it was this like very unique opportunity to be in this like very special place, and just sort of like, you can't waste this opportunity because it's so obviously like one of a kind for me,
right?
You know, like, I mean, if you live in Australia, maybe it's easier, but, or was it like that all the people there, you know, were like strangers effectively, because this is like a very like the opposite side of the globe, like you're just so far from home, it's a little bit easier to open up? Or was it like the group of people that I was with? And I would say, like, you know, as you peel back the layers, it was like, honestly, the group of people I went on study abroad with, I like, you would think you go and you experience this like huge thing and like, you know, like make lifelong friends and stuff. I didn't remain friends with literally any single person,
right,
who I went on that study abroad with. It was just, I think it was almost like your senior class thing where it was just like, you know, the chemistry just never really found itself. And I wouldn't say that like I felt excluded. I would just say it was true for everyone. Like,
right,
there were like too many separate like little factions and not enough threads to like piece the thing together. And it was like, no shade whatsoever. It just was like that.
I remember, like, this is such a smaller scale thing, but like when I did, I took classes to get my scuba certification when I was at Tech.
Yeah.
Like it was just sort of like a night thing. And, you know, all the people who showed up were basically just completely like from a different walk of somewhere, and everyone just wanted to learn how to scuba. And at the end of it, you had to go like on a like an overnight trip to do your final test in this big quarry, which was like super fun.
Yeah.
But like through the course of it, like you sort of got to, you know the other people in the class we're in this class together, and now we're all on this trip together. And it was like, while we were there, you had the friends you had while you were there, but afterwards, it was like, that was it. That was the end.
Right.
It was like, yeah, that was fun. You were cool. It was great. And we all liked each other. We all hung out, and you know, we had that one trip, and then that was it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, and I would say that's exactly how it was. Like, you know, you had like your little friend groups and everything. You know, you talked to everybody, Kevin, Justin, Peyton. You know, I remember those guys.
Yeah.
I know their names.
Yeah.
But like also it's like, yeah, you know, I mean, that was it. You know, and it was fine. And I never felt any, you know, ill will, and I doubt they did either.
Yeah.
But the point was, is that like, you know, I've always had this thing like going to weddings and stuff. Like I get like this like apprehension inside of me because I'm like, ugh. Like I'm going to go into an environment that is not my strong suit, and I'm not that good at it. And I hate not being better at it. Like,
right.
But I don't know how to build the skill. I don't know how to like grow. And I always do think about the Australia experience, and I'm like, I went to that rave and I did it. Like I was in it, you know, like I embraced the experience.
Yeah.
And had a great time. And, you know, I don't know. It was so weird, but it's fascinating to hear that like, maybe there is something about that. Like it makes me wonder, like if we shouldn't try to find something like that to go and be like a part of.
Right.
Because if you ask me like my taste in music, I'd be like, it's really eclectic. Like, you know, I could listen to anything from Linkin Park to Taylor Swift to, you know, old school country music, Toby Keith, like I, you know, like whatever. Like I don't know how broad the spectrum can be. You know, the Encanto soundtrack,
right?
Now thanks to you, Blackpink.
You're welcome.
Like, you know, so and I know that this is probably true for more people, and like as Spotify and everything grows, and you know, music is just so much more accessible. It's easier to like more kinds of music versus going to like a CD store and like flicking through the tray.
right.
Like, you know, oh, I like this punk rock music, so I bet I will also like this other punk rock music.
Right.
But you probably aren't just going to be like, why don't I go take a random stab at country? But techno, like I wouldn't even know how to say like I have like a favorite techno artist.
I bet. Didn't you like Bass Hunter? Wasn't that, I feel like you were.
I did like Bass Hunter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was like a...
So mainstream, Ben.
I know. My bad. You know.
Sven would never let you in.
Sven would never let me in. They,
first of all, we're American, and that would stand out just immediately, I think. Yeah.
You think for you it would be the handlebar mustache?
It that could would be. Give it away? Maybe, yeah. Honestly, no, I think that would help me. You think I think help? I'd have a better chance than you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I honestly, I think you're probably faster to feel the rhythm anyway.
Feel the rhythm, feel the flow.
Here's the thing.
Even if we did this, I feel like we'd have to like find individual places to go do it. I don't feel like we could even do it. If together. We were there together.
No, I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. It's like, you know what? Don't need to be, you know what? Like what you do in your own techno.
Exactly.
Enjoy it within the privacy of your own techno.
Right. I think I would have to take a lot of work to, yeah, go do it and do it with like other people I knew, you know, but I think I'd have to like work up to being comfortable with that because the whole point would be that like, there's no one here who knows me at all.
Right. You know? Right. Yes.
That
yes.
like lets you like let the reins of constraint go some for some reason.
Right. Yep. No, I totally agree. Now on the flip flop side of things where anonymity is maybe a desired objective. I have been curious about this before and my brain sort of started like whirring in the background as you were talking about your like high school reunion. And it's like, I'm afraid that all I'm really doing is just reinventing like speed dating. But like not speed dating for like romantic purposes so much as just like meeting new people.
Yeah.
But meeting new people to me is hard. Like a lot of times it's sort of like, I don't know, not always, but sometimes, you know, like if somebody were to just like randomly come up to us, like I remember very early on when we like did like Playlist Live, it was like a YouTube conference and we were still kind of just like getting used to doing what we did. And like, it was really nice that we had some people come up to us and just sort of like forge like a small, like little collective.
Yeah.
And then we just sort of like meander the hall together and we talked about each other's content and we sort of got to know each other and
Con squad.
Yeah. But like, sometimes that door is open for people and sometimes it's not, you know, like if you were out and you encountered like a group of people who were like getting together because they were, you know, old college friends and they all happen to be in town at the same time. So they went to the brewery and they're all sitting down. It's like, they might not want like a person external just coming up, trying to strike up a friendship with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, maybe they would, you know, but like, I was almost thinking like a speakeasy, you know, but like a randomly assigned speakeasy where like part of the idea is like you walk into the door and there's just like a myriad of different like seating opportunities, couches, you know, like little like discussion areas, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And you're basically just like given a number when you walk in the door and you go sit in that seat. And it's like, you're going to be in seat 38.
Right.
And it's almost like the point of this particular environment is like, there are going to be different people next to you.
Right.
You know, and it's sort of
that's
like
the kind of club this is.
It's the kind of club this is. Yeah. That's that it is like the entire objective of the space.
Right.
Which also then means that everybody going by design is like walking in effectively being like, yeah, you know, like if we have one thing in common, it's that we all think that this particular experiment is worth doing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes actually like I think airplanes randomly can kind of do this a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, not everyone is certainly sitting down thinking like, all right, the point of this flight is to talk to the people around me.
No, of course. Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. But the airport can sometimes be a strange place because, or public transit in general, because a lot of people need to use it, but they all come from different walks of life entirely. So
yeah.
I always love people watching at the airport because you are just literally seeing different people.
Yeah. Airports, flight. Great equalizer.
It is.
We all got to go to the same place.
Yes, exactly. For entirely different reasons.
Yeah.
But so sometimes like when you sit down in the airplane seat, you just get to speak to somebody who is like totally different.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like you have no, like you wouldn't have crossed paths with them had you not been sat next to each other. But of course then, you know, airplane, air travel, I don't know what it is about it, but it's just naturally exhausting. And sometimes you don't want to be like on for that experience.
Yeah.
So you don't want to speak or talk to the person. So I'm not like an always on speak to the person next to me. Sometimes I'll just like, you know, have like a genial little like, hey, how are you guys? Where are you from? That type of thing. But yeah. So if you went into this environment and it sort of like allowed you to like plop down and then just kind of see what happened. I don't know. I bet you would make so many new friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are, speaking of like cons and stuff, we are going to be at D23. Actually, as people are listening to this, we're probably already there at D23.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, yes. So like, we are.
Maybe we're primed to just, you know, go mingle with a bunch of strangers and meet new friends.
Maybe that should be the thing. Yeah. So if you're also going to D23 and you see us, you should just definitely come up and say hello.
Oh, absolutely that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that would be tremendous. But you're right. Like, yeah, it is like, it's odd to me how you can be alone in a room full of people, which I know is not like an original sentiment, but it sometimes is what happens. Like when you and I went to Tokyo for Star Wars celebrations, it's like we're in this like really cool place. We're on the other side of the globe. You know, like how cool. But like we really mostly just stayed with each other the whole time.
Right.
And
yes.
And, you know, it's hard for it to be anything other than that. Not that I'm complaining.
No, yeah, I mean, it's a blast. Yeah, yeah, really cool trip.
But yeah, it's like, isn't it wild that you're like in a room full of people who all love Star Wars together, and yet like somehow it also feels completely unrealistic to speak to any of them.
Right. Yeah. Like they're all here doing their own thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then on the flip side, like when we go on tour, one of the things that warms my heart like crazy is how many people show up, one by themselves. You know, like it's a bold thing to go attend like an event. You know, like if there was a concert coming through town, like if I couldn't find anybody to go with, it would seem unreasonable to go alone.
Just wouldn't
go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh man, I really want to go to that thing, but like I couldn't find anyone to go with. It'd be like, you know,
so the irony is that if you go, you'll find a ton of people who are also into that music.
Well, exactly. Yes. Which I think is like what happens on tour is like, if you live in the Sacramento area, maybe you have no idea that there are other people there that also like fandoms in this particular capacity.
Yeah.
And so you show up to this event and then you are surrounded by other people who are specifically there because you all share this thing.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you can watch friendships like being made in real time as you just like look out into the crowd. It's like, oh, this really is so cool. You know, everybody just sits down and they talk to each other. They figure out who each other is and boom, bam.
Boom, bam. I know. I'm very curious when I go to the Lisa concert later this year, like what the people around me are going to be like.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Like they're, I mean, cause we have like, we have pretty good seats. So I'm like, people who did this are like serious about it, you know?
Right.
Like they also want it to be up close, and which I wouldn't have even gotten these seats except that it was like, this is what was still available when I got on the site, you know?
Right.
It was like this or nothing. And I was like, I'm going. So this is where I'm at. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be like, if like me and Beth are going to be there and we're going to be surrounded by just like, you know, people like 20 years younger than us or not, or if it'll just be or just all walks of life, or I don't know at all what to expect from the crowd.
I mean, it's also, there's, you also got the Vegas of it all.
Also the Vegas of it all.
Yeah. Which sometimes means that there's going to just be like not that there aren't any kids in Vegas or anything, or things for kids to do in Vegas, or younger people for that matter, but
it's kind of a 21 and older city.
It does feel that way.
Yeah.
It does feel that way. Yeah. Maybe you should come up with a good question. Like, hey, do you bleed black or pink? You know what I'm saying?
I know. Right. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Which way are we going here?
Where are we going?
Yeah. if you had to answer that question, what do you think?
Do I bleed black or pink?
Yeah. I'm not even sure what either of them means.
I think the whole point is that it is like pretty but confident. Like you don't have to be one or the other. It is like, yeah, we're total like bosses and the best at what we do, but also like that doesn't mean I can't be really like pretty and girly or whatever at the same time.
Absolutely. I think
that's sort of the sentiment they're going for.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I think it works.
Yeah. 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 They're pulling it off.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Turns out
they know what they're doing over there. They just celebrated their 10th anniversary, Blackpink.
Oh, good for them.
I know. Guess what? It's on Beth's birthday. Ah, crazy.
Wow.
What are the odds?
It's like, move over, Beth. Sorry, we gotta celebrate.
What a great day.
Like,
apparently people were very underwhelmed by the 10th anniversary celebrations of Blackpink and were blaming YG Entertainment for not making a bigger deal out of it or something.
Man.
And it was kind of funny because I was like going through, I was like, oh my god, 10th anniversary, there's gotta be like, I don't know, merch or maybe like a new song or something happening, and I was kind of like, I can't believe is it just like an Instagram post? And then sure enough, people were upset by the underwhelmingness of it, so I was like, okay, not just me.
Not just me.
I was like, come on, it feels like a big deal.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's a good conversation starter. Like you sit down, you're starting to like talk to the people next to you. Like, how about the 10th anniversary?
Right? I mean, like pretty lackluster.
At least we're here.
I know.
You know, like
we're here.
Yeah.
Right.
It's making up for that. The real fans. I know.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. How many people will be there who are just like, this was something happening in Vegas tonight? How many people will be there that are solely Lisa fans and not also Blackpink fans? And I'm so curious just what the crowd is going to be like.
It's going to be very interesting. Yeah. I mean, you're entering a whole new domain. Okay. So here's a good closing question then before we go out. So we're talking about like the bar. Where was the bar in Germany?
It was in Germany, in Berlin.
In Berlin. Okay. So if they had like a Blackpink club and
could I get in?
A specialty bouncer who is able to see whether or not your heart speaks the soul of Blackpink, would they let you through?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, I haven't been to like any of like the concerts or anything yet, so I maybe don't entirely like understand the experience like inside my core.
Yeah,
but like it is like almost the only music I listen to. So
I was gonna say, know,
like there's not like I mean.
I mean, you'll like, we'll be standing around like having lunch here in the office and you'll give us like the occasional like lore drop or whatever on like what's going on in the world of Blackpink. And like, so for me, this is like the true curiosity, because if this bouncer is as good as you say, then they should be able to see into your soul and see what's there, which almost means you should be able to dress exactly as you, Jonathan Carlin,
right,
would dress, and it would be sufficient. Like you don't have to put on a stume to qualify, because they could tell, they could see the sparkle in your eye.
Yeah.
You know? Would
be able to tell. They would know.
They should know.
I think that apparently a question you get asked, because it's apparently you stand in line to get into said club, the Bergheim is what it's called.
The Bergheim. Okay.
And it's like, you'll be standing in line for 3 to 4 hours on average, but occasionally up to like 7 or 8, just to get to the door. And that's where you will face the judgment of the bouncer.
And so there are plenty of people almost certainly who get there and are turned away.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're just like, not tonight. But apparently a common question they'll get asked is like, do you know who's playing tonight? So like, I guess you would, that is like a revealing question, because it would probably mean that like, if you knew who was playing, how could you know who was playing? They don't even have like a website, you know? Yeah, it's not like you can look up who you're going to see. The only way to know who'd be playing there would be to have been so involved in the rest of the techno scene in Berlin to have found out from those other places that like, oh yeah, I'm whatever DJ, I'm playing Bergheim, you know, next Wednesday or whatever. So then that would reveal that you knew kind of thing.
Right. Like, okay, this is very interesting. And I have to pull it to something I actually have context for. So I apologize to step away from this vital music-based conversation. But like, there was a like MACNA, which is the Marine Aquarium Conference of North America. Let me push my spectacles up just a little bit after that one. There was like 1 year in particular that we went, and I think it was in Dallas, and there was a single most special coral at the event.
Yeah.
And I would say any true hobbyist could tell you that in this hall of 1,000 vendors or whatever, you know, hundreds of vendors, so many people selling coral, any person there could tell you, any person who knew could tell you what the single most special coral was there. And it was a rainbow plate coral.
Rainbow plate coral.
It was extremely unusual, basically an anomaly of biological existence.
Yeah.
And it was like a really big deal, you know, that like you could see one at all.
Right.
And even like my crappy cell phone camera back in the day, I think I got like a picture of it that was like, wow, like you could just tell what you're looking at isn't supposed to be.
Right.
But it's small, you know, we're talking about the thing, like something maybe the size of like a sand dollar, you know, like 3.5 inches across.
Right. Okay.
And it's not like there were like giant posters. It's not like this like big thing. Like, it's not like, you know, people were like, come to MACNA because it's going to be there. Like, nobody would have known. But like, if you walked the hall, you would know it was that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so like, if they asked me, it's like, what is the most important coral here? I'd say it's the rainbow plate coral.
Right.
Like, and they'd be like, yep, correct. Like,
right.
And I have no doubt in my mind that that is the correct answer.
Right. And then you'd be allowed in a coral club.
I would be allowed in a coral club. Thank goodness.
Yeah. So the question is like, if it was just a solely specific Blackpink club, I think maybe I could. But if it was like, you know, a K-pop club, Like, I don't know.
Right.
Because, yes, like, I'm really just about the one band and the four members.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they were like, you know, and to that end, they're one of the two most popular K-pop bands in the world.
Right. Yes.
They are the most popular female group for sure.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, like, you know, it's, you know, you're a fan of like the it's like, yeah, it's like Taylor Swift, you know?
Right. And that would be like an interesting one. Cause like, I know like the Swifties roll deep. So it's like, you know, a fairly basic Taylor Swift lore question might be like, what is Taylor's birthday? And right, it's like, you might just be able to answer that because you know it.
Right.
Like, you know, I know that like 13 is her, you know, number, mm-hmm, and it's December 13th.
Right.
And so I do happen to know that piece of trivia, but like, hopefully I got that right. Isabel can maybe just put like a giant, like, if I got it wrong.
Right.
But I mean, the point is that like, that might not be enough, you know?
Right, exactly.
And like, you could talk to like any lay person, and the fact that I possibly know this piece of information might be like, wow, you're really like in on this. And it's like, well, sort of, but I don't think I'm in it compared to like all the details that people have gone through and found about, you know, Taylor Swift's lore and the Easter eggs she drops.
Could you get into the Taylor Swift club?
No,
you
know? I don't think I can get into that. Harry Potter club, I could absolutely get into.
I mean, we may as well just open that.
We may as well
just open that.
I mean, that's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, I could even be like to the bouncer, like, do you even know that Hogwarts is a dragon? Like,
right.
Do you even know that? You know,
right.
Because I know that.
You know that. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be so tricky. Like what people would you want at Harry Potter Club? You
know? Ooh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, obviously all of our people.
Obviously all our people. Anyone listening,
Anyone listening, and anybody who'd ever be open to listening. I'm not really big on...
But see, that's the thing. This club is not just open to anyone who, like, has listened to techno music.
I'm realizing I just don't like gatekeeping, and right, I understand that for the purposes of exactly what they're doing there, that filter probably works exceptionally well.
It works to the extent that it is the most exclusive nightclub, and, like, the most famous nightclub in the world,
right,
because of its exclusivity, you know.
Yes, but I'm not big on exclusivity.
I agree.
You know, so it's like, it, I mean, if there's a, you know, if we're talking like Disney pins and it's like one of 100, it's like that, I find that to be very cool because I don't feel like people are excluded from pins because this is one of 100. You know, and I can even respect exactly what's going on here. It's very cool, it's unique, but that's part of the allure,
right? They're not trying to be like mega popular or anything. They are trying to be techno.
They're trying to be techno. And I bet even on some level, like, going and being rejected can also be its own experience that people can walk away with.
That is how the podcast started, was the story of two guys who got rejected. And they were like, even just being rejected was like sort of a fun experience.
Precisely. Yeah. So I think that there's something to be said for, like, it's as exclusionary as it is as to like who gets to set foot inside. It's also kind of cool that it's not exclusionary on the basis of income. It's not just like, oh, you're famous, or, oh, you have tons of money, or you can tip the bouncer, you know, slip them $100 or whatever,
right,
to get through the door. You know, it sounds like there is like an art to what's happening, and there's, you know, legacy to it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not a fan of exclusivity, but I can understand how that exists.
Right.
But I wouldn't create it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we'd be pretty open to all people.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Like, I would never say you're not a Harry Potter fan enough to enjoy what we're attempting to do here, because it's like, well, what good does that do literally anyone?
I know. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's a good place to stop. Yeah. What a great episode, though. Oh, man. My question for the viewing or listening, whatever audience today, is going to be, what year storm are you? Or even if you were to take like a goat type persona, like, Is there a way you could like math yourself into how it can exist? Like, could LeBron be a 1,000 year storm and yet also exist like within the same lifetime as Jordan?
I mean, those are, it's possible.
It is possible,
right?
Yeah, you know, it's like I think there's a myriad of different ways to look at it and how that type of thing works. But I just think it's especially interesting to imagine, and I don't even know if I could like guess what I think I am.
Right. What kind of storm are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 25 year storm?
I mean, I don't know. You're a pretty unique storm. I don't know anyone else like you, you know?
Hey, that's something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. How about you?
I don't know what kind of storm I am.
Are you a sea? Are you a sea in storm?
I'm a sea in storm. That's right.
That's it. Yeah.
I have no idea.
There we go. All right. The name of the wind. People get it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any feedback about what kind of storm you are, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. But also, we don't gatekeep what type of emails you can send. You can send us emails about anything
whatever you want, strike your fancy.
Yeah. So there's that. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture, where you can get things like ad-free listening, bonus content, and exclusive merch. So check that out over there. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishawn Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.